I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago, and a year ago I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
My Brother's Keeper is a free store for the homeless, and we're in the process of raising enough money to get a store. We're having a fundraiser on the 19th at the Women's Club. It's open at 7 o'clock and music starts at 8, and it's going to be Dylan's Dharma and Bahopki and Low Flying Birds are going to be the feature of the night, and we hope everybody will take some time and come by.
All right, again, Will Mash here on behalf of the Without a Roof Radio program, the May 17th edition. You're in for a treat today. We got the Homeward Street Journal edition, and that is in concert with the street newspaper that's been published 20 years out of Sacramento. In the last few months, we have made an agreement with them. They ship us 500 copies, and we have our own page called the Chico Vibe. What you're going to be hearing from most of the people that penned essays for this current edition, May, June 2017. And to actually access a copy of the Homewood Street Journal, if you're listening to this in the Chico area, go to the Chico Peace and Justice Center on Broadway. We have copies here in the green room of KZFR. And we also have copies available in different coffee shops. Enjoy. We're going to start off with Jess Candela here on People Power Radio. All right, Guillermo Mash for the May 17th Without a Roof Radio program, the Homewood Street Journal edition. It's my real pleasure. I actually have the facilitator for the Butte County Youth Advisory Council, Jessica Candela, in the house for a pre-record. Welcome to KZFR, Jess Candela.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Man, I'm really interested, Jess, to just get a few words from you around how much joy and how much fun it was, you know, helping to pull this page together for this edition.
Definitely. It was great to have. We have three youth voices on this piece, and it's just so important to have our youth advisory councils out there and sharing their voices, their experiences, their opinions with the community. So I was so happy to help facilitate that.
And it looks beautiful.
It does.
I really
like
how the layout went. So I know you're going to be graduating like in a week or something, huh?
Yeah,
congratulations.
Saturday. Thank you.
On Saturday, wonderful Mother's Day present. So
yeah.
I know. So your final internship of your 4-year academic career, your bachelor career at Chico State was interning at BCOE School Ties. Maybe a few words around how joyful that experience was as well.
Sure. Megan, Josh, and everyone at BCOE School Ties are absolute great mentors and coworkers to learn from. I learned a ton about community organizing, about education, about leadership, and it was a really wonderful experience to have, and I thank them all for that.
So folks that might not know what School Ties does, what do they do, real quick?
Sure. They do homeless education and foster youth services, so case management, tutoring, providing school supplies to youth. So I got to work some one-on-one with youth as well as doing some community organizing around these activities. It was a really great experience.
All right, Jess, any final comments before we bring the youth from the pieces in here for some interviews?
I'm so excited for everyone to hear what these youth have to say. They're amazing, passionate leaders, and they have some great stories to share.
I believe with that so much. Give me a high five.
What I want you to know about me. The knowledge I have gained from being homeless on more occasions than one is that there's this stereotype that is almost branded on our foreheads. Once people find out that we are in fact homeless, or if we have been frequently seen sleeping on the streets, that stereotype is that we're lazy, druggies, went to jail, and or just plain criminals. They almost look at us like less of a human being. People would be surprised if they took the time to hear our stories and understand why we are in the spot we are in. What I'm hoping to achieve when I join the Youth Advisory Council is to be the voice of all the homeless, to show the world that we are more than our mistakes and our struggle, that we are human beings and we deserve a second chance. What I want people to know about me exactly is that I'm in fact just as human as anyone else, walking around the streets of downtown Chico. I just in fact do not have a place to call home. I'm one of the most non-judgmental people you ever meet, caring and loyal. I always try to understand where someone is coming from, even if they're wrong. I always try to see the good in people. I have a few neck tattoos that I got when I was a teenager that make people look at me like I'm a thug or I'm a felon, but actually I've never been arrested or in a gang. I'm in fact going to college to become a motivational speaker. I want to speak on behalf of every other homeless youth when I answer the question, what do you want people to know about you? Because everything I just described in myself, I have in fact seen every other youth with some minor differences. So that is what I want you to know about me and my fellow peers. Jeremy William Wolf.
Jeremy, thanks so much for reading that on air, man.
Of course.
Jeremy William Wolf, how old are you?
I'm 21.
21?
21.
That's a great age to be, man.
Thank you, man.
I can remember back to 21. It's been a few years, but I can still remember that milestone. You've been in Chico. How long have you been in Chico, man?
I've bounced around from group homes, foster homes. I lived here my whole life, but mm-hmm. I've probably about 7 or 8 years now.
Motivational speaker, man. I know you've got a lot of powerful words around that, but where do you see yourself, you know, 3, 4, 5 years with the skills you're going to get through college and how you're going to apply that?
You know, hopefully either motivational speaker or therapist for, you know, teens or youth in rehabilitation centers. So mm-hmm. one of those two.
Maybe we can close on your experience working with the Youth Advisory Council, man.
Well, you know, honestly, I love it because I like think that I made a difference in, you know, I'm trying just to help people hear us out and that we're humans and we're people and we just going through more than other people. So.
Speaking of hearing us out, what, you got any final words, man?
Just don't judge a book by its cover and you see someone on the streets and take the time, ask them how their day was and what their name is and it makes a difference. It makes change the whole day. So.
Yeah.
That's about it.
It was kind of cool. That's almost how we started our conversation when you came into the studio.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of couch surfing, so you're actually, quote-unquote, a homeless youth here in the streets of Chico.
Yeah, and I was there's a period of time where I actually slept on the streets and got stabbed twice, but yeah, luckily I have a roof over my head now, so.
Yeah, as I say that, you know your housing status doesn't define who you are, but man, it's just a blessing to have you in our community, Jeremy William Wolf.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So Without a Roof Radio program is made possible by generous contributions of KZPR supporters and by Corey Lee Pest Control. Whether you're dealing with ants, roaches, rodents, or other types of pests, the experts at locally owned Corey Lee Pest Control have you covered. They provide regular scheduled and emergency visits for residential and commercial property. Want to be pest free? Call Corey Lee at 228-8717 or visit CoreyLeePest.com. All right, Gamal Mash for the March 17th Without a Roof Radio program, the Homeward Street Journal edition. And I have on the line Suzanne Hastings, and Suzanne Hastings wrote an article, front page, Stakedown 2017, Where Am I Supposed to Live? I'm going to lead this with the first paragraph and then turn it over to Susan Hastings, who's going to give us some insights on Where Am I Supposed to Live? By Suzanne Hastings. An ancient, now dark, neon Diet Pepsi sign sits frozen in mid-revolution, the kind of sign that was prevalent in the 1950s and 60s. It is all that's left of the torpedo diner that once stood here. The normally vacant lot at 12th and C Streets was for a few hours to be turned into a small community. Welcome to KZFR, Suzanne Hastings. Tell us all about that small community and that event.
Okay. Well, it started at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and a lot of people showed up for it. And there was a lot of youth there, a lot of that have been there. They have been going to a youth program that's over by the St. Paul's Episcopalian Church that's on 17th Street. And a lot of them had come there, and it was a lot of people from Shock. And what we were doing is that we were trying to show the city that how a tent city could be run with a minimum of problems, that you're not going to have a bunch of drunk people leaving trash, getting into fights, you know, stealing each other's stuff, as which I think a lot of people think a tent city might have happen. Instead, you know, we're trying to show that with some supervision and people there to de-escalate problems. Because, I mean, like I said in my article, it's not just going to be this big utopian thing going on. You're people are people, and you're going to have some problems, you know, here and there. And so it's very much like Wolves and Fishes is run, you know, with the green hat. and they're going around, and if somebody starts trouble, they're told to leave the park for the day. And I think that with a tent city, if there was somebody that they could have people there at night, and like if, let's say there was problems, or somebody that was starting problems, or somebody that's drunk or doing drugs or something, they would be told to leave the tent city and return maybe the following night if they're able to behave themselves.
Yes, I know you mentioned you de-escalated some situations, and you also talked about, you know, having asked some folks to leave. Maybe just a little bit of insights on those instances.
Well, there was some people got into an argument over a sleeping bag, and they decided to leave. And there was one person that I think was drunk and was somewhat disruptive, and they were told to leave. And other than that, you know, there wasn't too many problems, you know, for the amount of people that they had in the small place that we had. But it was handled quite well. We had a girl named Nikki that was did a really just bang up job organizing this, and she was very good at de-escalating. I mean, for such a young person to be able to do this, I mean, that was just amazing. She did everything with a wave of magic wand and abracadabra, make everything work. So.
We've had Nikki on the last Homeward Street Journal edition. I mm-hmm. think a fair assessment of the size of the space, I'd say it's 60 by maybe 200 feet. Would that be a close approximation?
I would say that's about what it was.
And then how many people did you have that were sleeping there, and how many people were there just like for the day?
I think there was probably close to 100 people that were there for the day. And at night, you know, we had about, I'm going to say, probably about 20, 25 tents. Probably, you know, some of them, some youth who brought their own tent. There was about 8 people staying there, and I had my own tent, and there was a woman that's staying there with a couple kids. And I'd say altogether there was probably about maybe close to 50, 60 people staying over, and it went really well, and minimum of problems.
You know, I know when I was there, I mean, everyone has kind of like duty stations, kind of military term, but there was people at the gates checking people in. But at night you had, quote unquote, night watch people. I mean, is that kind of the same thing you had this year, kind of the same arrangement?
Oh, yes, same thing, because, you know, you do have to have night people because, you know, it's night. There's people that can sneak in and try to cause nonsense, or, you know, maybe try to steal something or climb inside somebody's tent uninvited. It's just one of those things. So you do have to have, like I said, you know, supervision at night, because it seems like that's when people are most vulnerable at night, when they're trying to sleep.
Just like a college dorm, huh? In a way.
It was.
Now, you had some programs that you ran out of there. Maybe some insights on some of the more major programs, because I know I went to Claire White's Know Your Rights training back in 2014, and that really stuck out to me, and you did that again. But maybe a little bit on the programs that you and Nikki had set up.
Okay, yes, we did have the Know Your Rights training, which is very helpful as people get pulled down by the police. You know, they know what to do. In fact, I was at a event not too long ago, and a little boy came up to his mother, and he says, and his mother asked him where he was, and he says, well, a cop kept trying to talk to me, but I said, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk to you. And she says, that's good. And I thought, wow, even kids are learning, so that's really good. I felt the Know Your Rights training is just really good to have, because people need to know their rights. Police say, I need to search your purse. And you think, oh, man, if I don't let the cop search my purse, I'm going to go to jail. Because that used to be my first thought, and now all you have to do is say, I'm sorry, I don't consent to a search. And I didn't know that before. And
they use that to their advantage massively. As soon as you just say, sure, go ahead, look in my purse, they could go to court and say, hey, you know, they let me do it. You know, that's kind of the deal.
Yeah.
Now, you guys did like this cool little march, and I'll read this thing. At 2:30, some took off for the march chanting, what do we want? The right to rest. When do we want it? Now. Maybe a little insight on how big that march was, where you guys marched.
It was quite a few people. Like I said, some of us stayed back at the camp. I did, because my arthritis was acting up. And I can't march like I used to. And there was a few of us that stayed behind, just kind of to keep an eye on things and everything. And so everybody went on the march. But sadly, somebody did speed up and try to drive into the march, and this really isn't fortunate, because some guy did have his foot run over. but it wasn't probably as bad as it could have been. I mean, that could have been a very serious, tragic situation.
That detail really wasn't in the article. I mean, you, by your estimation, it was a vehicular assault. I mean, you said somebody's foot got run over, but everyone thinks maybe someone tried to run him over on purpose?
Yeah, that's what some of the people say. I wasn't there. See, I was in my tent, and okay. I was...
No police presence, right? So no. It's just, okay, what people saw.
So I really don't know what came of that, but I do think that somebody may have actually tried to run into the marchers. And, you know, it's just very tragic that you do have people that are so against something that people are trying to do that they will try to injure people that are trying to make their point.
I'd like to read the last paragraph. That's Suzanne Hastings. Folks just joining, we got Suzanne Hastings on the phone, pre-record. She wrote a beautiful article about Stakedown 2017 in Sacramento. Where am I supposed to live? But her last paragraph reads, I watched two young men who had become friends during the Stakedown. One was telling the other about this place along the river to camp. Like a modern-day Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer, they headed out of the black iron gates with the green Where Am I Supposed to Live buttons into their backpacks.
Yeah, and that's one nice thing that I did see at the Stakedown was there was a lot of friendships that formed. There was a lot of, you know, relationships that formed, and especially there was a lot of people there that go back and they sleep along the river, and I think they had more of a sense of who their neighbor is. And I did have to say that one thing that I saw a lot of community among the people that are homeless, you know, it's like a lot of them do take care of each other. They do look out for each other. This isn't just people are drunk, that people are on drugs. This is people that have become homeless. Either their rents went up, they got laid off from their jobs, they were overextended in their spending. For some people, it's like blowing up a balloon, and one day it pops, and you get nothing.
You had mentioned how Faygo had his card taken by the police. We're going to follow up with an interview with him around that.
Yeah, because that was, you know, David Andre did have to go with him and help him get his card back from, I think it was this, in the warehouse, it's Cuellar Boulevard, and that's really hard because that's all his stuff there in that cart.
Yeah, everything's in there.
Yeah, and when it's taken, you know, that's really hard. And like many people, when they have their possessions confiscated by police is evidence of illegal camping. You know, they take people's IDs, they take people's wallets, they take people meds sometimes because, you know, I've gone to the shock meetings at Loaves and Fishes, and I hear these stories all the time about from people who have their stuff confiscated and what a nightmare it is.
Yeah, it's harassment because obviously they could take pictures or some other thing. At least that's my estimate of how these things roll. And certainly for listeners that are listening, you know, just kind of imagine wherever your situation is that you live, be it a house, be it an apartment or wherever you live. Imagine if you just came back to your door and went to knock on and it was gone. There was nothing there. Everything you had was gone. And the police took it without any kind of notice. How would you feel? That's what I would say. How would you feel about that? You know,
it'd just be devastating.
Yeah,
you know,
it is devastating. Hey, Faygo, man, we got a few minutes here, and why don't you give us a little skinny on, you know, why the hell did they take your cart and how'd you get it back?
I had this big cart that's a big old box with a solar panel on it, and I had it locked up to a pole, and that's where I always lock it. But this one day, they decided to take it. They cut the industrial chain off and loaded it into their vehicle and took it into impound. Basically, the story that I was given was it was because there was two conflicting marches happening that day. There was the Cesar Chavez march, and then there was a MAGA march that was very one-sided on its perspective. And they decided that it posed a threat to the MAGA march for being locked where it was.
So they expected maybe it was booby-trapped or something? I'm just trying to figure this out.
I'm not sure either, but I know they left 3 feet of chain sitting there attached to the pole.
Do you know if you were physically breaking any law? Or was it their discretion to just take your stuff? I'm kind of confused.
Well, it's not there for more than 24 hours. This is the way they're supposed to do it. If they see something and they plan to confiscate it, they're supposed to tag it and give you time to get it. You know, they didn't do that.
By your estimation, did you know the offers as it took it? You know, because, I mean, you're pretty well known, man, in Sacramento. I'm assuming whoever took that bloody cart knew it was yours and knew it was in there. Is that a poor assessment?
It appears that these were officers that were pulled in from outside of the normal district.
Okay.
The person who witnessed it, like, thank heaven she was there, because that's the only reason I even knew the cops had it.
Okay.
Was because one of my allies through the movement witnessed them messing with my cart, and they're like, no, you can't touch that. What are you doing? Everybody knows who that is.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
they didn't stop them.
Well, at least I'm glad to hear it wasn't a cop that knew you and just decided this was a cool thing to do is put you through some pain, you know?
Yeah, thankfully. Well, it's hard to say because I did have no Trump, no KKK, no Fascist USA on the back of my cart.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have been targeting because of that. Who knows?
You know, I admire all the work that you're doing. Any closing comments? Anything you got going on? Our listeners should be aware of?
We've got the March Against Monsanto this Saturday and the Shutdown Monsanto event on Monday. Saturday will be at 11 o'clock at the Capitol, West Steps, and the Shutdown event will be at the Davis facility, the Simonon facility in Davis, Woodland. And I'm also working on a ballot initiative to alter what's being known as the camping ordinance, as well as speaking out every week at City Hall.
All right, on the phone, man, I have Paul Bowden, Western Regional Advocacy Project. He penned one of the front page articles for the Homewood Street Journal titled Unhoused People Silenced by Oregon Legislature. I'm going to read the first couple of paragraphs and let Paul jump right in here and give us the skinny. But in an unprecedented act of disrespect, the Right to Rest Act, HB-215, will not get a chance for a hearing in Oregon this year, in spite of an unprecedented 7 co-sponsors. I'm going to say that again. 7 co-sponsors. Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Representative Jeff Barker, refused to schedule House Bill 215 for a hearing in the Assembly Judiciary Committee prior to the deadline for a vote. Jump on in there, Paul Bowden, and fill us in on how crazy this is.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. And we've now had this bill, the Right to Rest Act, has been introduced 7 times in 3 states and always gotten a hearing. This truly was the first time in 4 years of continually bringing this issue back to state legislatures in Oregon and Colorado and California, saying, look, we need to pay attention to this. This is happening. We have documentation from law schools in all of these states, from the ACLU in all of these states. We have documentation from 1,600 outreaches, documented outreaches to homeless people in all these states. Like, this is not a joke. We literally are criminalizing people in our communities across all of these states.
So maybe for our listeners that aren't as familiar with the Right to Rest Act, as you are, since you have been the driving force, Western Regional Advocacy Project, to push these bills in all these different states, but Right to Rest Act, HB-215, what's the highlights of that, man? What were you guys looking for?
The bottom line is it says, based on a pattern and practice going back hundreds of years, local governments can no longer criminalize the mere presence of people. That if a law is passed that makes it illegal to stand still, everybody gets enforced under that law or nobody gets enforced under that law. We know from history that not everybody, imagine if everybody in the community that stood still on a public sidewalk or in a public park got a loitering ticket or got jacked up by the police for loitering, those laws would be off the books in 5 minutes. If everybody that ever sat down on a public sidewalk got harassed by the police or got a ticket from the police for sitting on a sidewalk, those laws would be gone. They've been on the books, they stay on the books, and they get enforced during different periods. The Civil Rights era, the loitering laws were heavily enforced. In San Francisco, the sitting on a sidewalk laws were heavily enforced in the 70s when the gay rights movement was burgeoning. In the Castro neighborhood especially, which is now an icon of the gay rights and gay and lesbian and rights movement. You know, these laws get used by local governments to remove people that local governments don't want to see. Hey, homeless people are the target. We weren't the first target, and we're fearful that we won't be the last target. So we want to get rid of these laws once and for all.
You know, what's next for the Golden State with the Right to Rest Act, Paul? And how can our listeners get involved to try to make some change and get some justice?
Absolutely, we know no meaningful civil rights legislation gets passed the first year, the second year, or the third year. We know that. We're not naive. And so we would ask people to go to our website, rapphome.org. We have everything broken out by state. We have an overall campaign page, and we have it broken out by state. We most certainly hope to and intend to and will be working towards bringing this bill back into the California legislature in 2018. We have every expectation that we will be able to do that. We have every expectation that we will get a hearing. We have every intention of seeing this bill finally move forward and pass. And we would recommend that that's the best place to go to look at what's happening in each of the states and also see how we're connected to each other. Amazing artwork, hardcore UC Berkeley research that's been done to see how the business improvement districts tie in with this sort of criminalization and gentrification campaign, to learn the issues and to support human beings' rights.
Maybe a little shift for a closing, Paul. I mean, what have you seen in the San Fran area, you know, where your home office is based? On a positive note, has anything really struck you in the past 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks?
I would say, and this is sad to say, but I think that the issue, like, and a challenge for us has always been, we come from the streets. Most of us have been homeless, myself included, for several years. But racism and classism and inequality, those are the issues that created homelessness. It wasn't an individual lifestyle choice of people to live out on the streets. And what we're seeing under the Trump administration with Jeff Sessions and the Attorney General's office and Ben Carson at HUD and DeVos at Education, people are getting a real sense these issues interconnect. These issues are all about social justice and human rights. They're all relevant. They're all important. The Affordable Care Act, the elimination of the true Affordable Care Act. These issues are all connected. We need to all come together and band together and stop siloing our individual issues and work together under one umbrella of civil and human rights for all people.
Okay, thanks for listening to the May 17th Without a Roof radio program. Guillermo Mash here. Want to find out more about Without a Roof? Look us up. Homepage, WOAROOF.TUMBLR.COM. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're a bunch of places. Also, check for these Homeward Street Journals and the Chico Vibe out and about Chico and the surrounds. And tune in and check out the Chico Vibe, a new show here on KZFR 90.1 FM, Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. here on Big Power Radio. Guillermo Mash here, host of the Without a Roof radio program, which kicks off a trifecta of KZFR Wednesday public affairs programming, airing from 5 to 5:30.
Each week we explore poverty, the worst form of violence, focusing on human beings without a roof. Thanks for listening, and if you have a roof, be grateful. Non-Human Radio, hosted by Jeannie Fazzino, talks all things animal rights, bringing you the latest news and interviews with local activists.
Plus book, film, and restaurant reviews and deep discussions of the benefits of veganism.
For humans and non-humans alike, Wednesdays from 5:30 till 6 p.m. The Real Issue, hosted by Sue Hildebrand, digs into topics ranging from elections to environmental protection.
From social justice to economic justice, from the local to the global.
We cover the political part of everything. Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m.
Thanks for listening to
Big Power Radio.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star.
Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh yes, vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 2359 The Esplanade.